Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
27 years ago, pop singer Cher asked us this question, "Do you believe in life after love?" And it probably rocketed to the top of the charts, selling 11 million copies of the song. Today, in 2025, a better question, especially for copywriters, is, do you believe in sales without belief? It's a question our returning champion today, Billy Bross, has thought about a lot and mastered the answer to. He's written a book about it, which I highly recommend. I'll show it to you here with my post-it note on it. And we'll talk about that later in the show. Billy's a very interesting life. He's a beer brewer and beer judge. In fact, he started teaching cohort-based courses online 11 years ago, way before the trend, on, wouldn't you know it, beer tasting. But he's done a lot in marketing, a lot of other things, advising top entrepreneurs and working in more than 100 niches, including such unusual ones as vegan fitness, kundalini yoga, and machine learning. He has some unusual and valuable perspectives on marketing and copywriting, which everybody should know about. I'm also proud to say Billy was my mentoring client way back when. And since then, he has done so many things I could not even have dreamed of doing myself. Now, before we hear what he has to say, I think you should hear what I have to say. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims, and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So, Billy, welcome back, and thanks so much for making time to see us.
Yeah, thank you, David. Yeah, thanks for that intro. It's great to be back. Hello to the listener. And yeah, you mentioned way back when you mentioned me for that year. You know, we just rolled over the calendar here into 2025. And David, it's been 10 years. It was 2015 was that year that you mentored me. And whether you know it or not, really changed the course of not just my career, but my life by introducing me to this thing called copywriting. My book wouldn't be here if it weren't for that year. So I thank you. And I'm just excited to be back and to talk about this topic that we both love so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And so we are going to talk about building belief, but I think you think, and I think I agree, that building belief starts with argumentation, right? You know, good, solid conversational copywriting argumentation. How has studying argumentation, well, what is it and how has it changed the way you approach copywriting?
Yeah, the word leverage comes to mind. I'm always looking for leverage. What is the biggest bang for my buck? Especially, I've done some freelance copywriting. I've mainly written copy for myself and have consulted with and advised business owners who are not trying to be professional copywriters. So I'm always looking for them to help them find leverage. What is the biggest thing that they can do to make the biggest difference in their results? And I believe fully that argumentation, which is upstream, I would say, of copywriting, where the words get deployed through the marketing channels, is the highest leverage activity you can engage in when it comes to writing copy. I wish I took it. I wish I took a philosophy class in school. I was a science major. So just over the past few years here, I've gone back through these teachings, these ancient teachings, going back thousands of years to Aristotle. And it's really opened my eyes and really improved my copy without directly focusing on copywriting, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Aristotle, so powerful, not only for copywriting, but also for all of drama, for screenwriters. I mean, I think I have a book and I'm probably going to screw up the title, but something like Aristotle's Ethics for Copywriters or one of his other books, not copywriters, for screenwriters. Yeah. So let's dig into argumentation a little bit and the tools of philosophy. How do these tools help us in structuring better marketing messages?
So there is a, you know, and there's, first of all, it's not, when I say argument, it's not what some people think. Some people are turned off by this, and they have been actually. I've heard from people after I wrote this book, where I talk about argumentation, and they say, nah, I don't like the word argue. Can we say something else, like the word advocate? We're not going to argue for our products that we want to advocate for them. And you really can't. You really can't change the word.
Do they think that argumentation means argumentative, which it doesn't?
Yes, they think it's, you know, throwing your cell phone across the room, or the road rage kind of an argument.
Okay. But what's the kind of argumentation you're talking about?
Well, it's rhetoric, but it's even more technical than that, I realize. So it's one way to describe it is like rhetoric, persuasive writing, putting a thesis forward, using the forms of evidence or proof that Aristotle identified, like ethos, pathos, logos. But what I realized is that there really is a technical definition, and you know, anyone who has a philosophy degree knows this, it's obvious. There's a classical structure to an argument. The nerdy term for this is a syllogism. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why you have to use the word argument, you can't use advocate, is because it has these tools associated with it, like syllogisms, which are made up of claims or premises, and then you arrive at a conclusion. And so this was the big aha for me, and this is what I mean by that. Syllogism, that classical structure of an argument using deductive reasoning to arrive at your conclusion, you need to have that, and that is upstream from your copy. And although that doesn't take a lot of text, we can go through some, it doesn't take a lot of ink to write these syllogisms, you need to be able to boil it down to one to have this logical structure. And once you have that classical argument in place, it becomes far easier to expand that into, say, an 18-page sales letter or a 2-hour VSL.
Well, I want to hear some of your examples, but I want to just underline what you're saying. Last week, I had a call with a coaching client, brilliant guy, very successful, has helped people get 7-8-figure businesses out of his work. Very well educated, but obviously not a philosophy major. And we had a Facebook ad for cold traffic, and I could see that he didn't understand the premise. And I mean, I'm not a philosophy major. I don't know all of these things, but I understand some of the basic concepts. The premise is like, what's the explicit or implicit understanding of where you're starting? And we had to go around a long time about that. And once we fixed that, the ad was brilliant, you know, because what he'd written was really good, but it started out on the wrong foot. So yeah, could you give us some of your examples maybe?
Exactly. Yeah. So let's walk through a classic syllogism. So, and this might bring back, sorry if I trigger memories of studying for your SATs, because this might sound familiar. So we have claims or premises, we use premises, and then a conclusion. So premise one, all men are mortal. Premise two, Socrates is a man. Therefore, and this is the conclusion, Socrates is mortal. Okay. So we have these premises and a conclusion, and we use deductive reasoning to arrive at that conclusion.
Okay. But unless we're selling a book about Socrates' mortality, that's probably not going to help us in copy very much, right? So, I mean, how does this translate into our world as copywriters?
Right. So let me give you a marketing example. Okay. I wanted to lay that out first, just a simple one so you understand how
it
works. Yeah. I love studying Gary Bensavenga's business, the olive oil business, which I'm sure you're familiar with, fresh pressed olive oil. It's easy to understand. You know, it's an everyday item. And plus, he's an awesome copywriter. So here's a syllogism for his business, fresh pressed olive oil. Premise one, most store-bought olive oil lacks freshness. Premise two, if olive oil is not fresh, it does not provide the maximum health and flavor benefits. The conclusion being, most store-bought olive oil is suboptimal for health and taste.
Okay, that's really good. And by the way, Gary Bensavenga, I've never heard him talk about syllogisms, but he is a master of them. I mean, he really understands the logical, philosophical side of putting copy together. So that was a great example. Now, does the example you just gave have anything to do with one of your core messages right now, which is about building belief?
Yes. Yeah. So here's the mistake that I see. Here's what happens, and I'll come back to belief building, is that, again, we work with a lot of business owners, and you'll find that if you can look at their copy, and if you try to distill it down into a syllogism like this, It doesn't add up. There are inconsistencies. The logic is not valid. Okay, so what you want to do is start at this point. Once you get this correct, then you can expand it. Then you can put it into the sales letter or the webinar or whatever it may be. Now, I want to point out two things because this is going to set up belief building. So you might wonder, okay, like what I just laid out with the olive oil example, again, I didn't take up a lot of room, did it? It was very short. Okay, so there's two things, two tests you want to conduct on your syllogism, on your marketing argument. First test is it valid? Second one is it sound? The valid one is about the logic of it. Are you crossing wires and there's sparks flying, right? So if so, the Socrates one, if the conclusion was, therefore Socrates is a dog, that would be invalid logic, right? That just, it doesn't add up. There's a fallacy there, a logical fallacy. Okay.
Right.
So and don't take that for granted, because again, we reverse engineer a lot of sales pages and you get that red flashing light, invalid, invalid, invalid. Okay. So you want to sort that thing out. Now, where the copy comes from, why you can write an 18-page sales letter from these syllogisms is the second test. Is it sound? And the soundness has to do with the truth of the premises. So for example, that first premise was most store-bought olive oil lacks freshness. Now, this is where the belief building comes into play. You can't take it for granted that somebody understands that or believes that. So what you need to do then is prove that most store-bought olive oil lacks freshness. Now, this is where you start building belief. And how you do that is you make claims. I just made the claim or the premise, right? That's my claim. That's my assertion. Most store-bought olive oil, it's not fresh. Okay, Billy, why should I believe you? Okay, now you bring in the proof. Here's the evidence. We can use ethos, pathos, logos, or a number of the other forms of proof. And so if we do that and we get the acceptance in the mind of the reader, then we pass those two tests. That syllogism is both valid and sound, and that leads to the sale.
That's really good. And you know, we just did a whole show on proof last week. But I think one area, because this kind of thinking is hard. I mean, this is not, you know, kid stuff, but you know, it's the hard thinking that, like you said, has leverage. A lot of people, I think, will start out with a premise that seems true to them and they never bother to think it's sound, and then they come to a conclusion and then they try and prove the conclusion, but it's like it's built on a very shaky foundation if the premise itself isn't proven and doesn't seem logical. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. So a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with this term, the chain of beliefs. I talk about it in the book. A lot of copywriters know this. So what happens, and this directly affects my work and why I call the book Simple Marketing for Smart People. There's a few reasons for the smart people, but a main one is that these are subject matter experts who know their topic really well, which is great. They create great products and services, but they also suffer from the curse of knowledge. And what happens when you suffer from the curse of knowledge is exactly what you said, where you assume these premises to be true. And so the beauty of laying it out in these syllogisms is that you can create a chain of them and you can go back and you can ask, well, for example, in the olive oil example, well, why is fresh better, right? Like, we're just assuming if we're selling this fresh pressed olive oil, they just know, right? The customer just knows that fresh is better. Well, assumptions are dangerous in copywriting. I think you taught me that, David. So you can create a syllogism before that even that has nothing to do with olive oil. That's fresh pressed foods contain more nutrients and better flavor than older processed foods, right? And then we can
I'm just imagining some people are thinking, well, of course fresh is better. Well, not necessarily going to be obvious to everyone. I mean, if someone's main diet is Twinkies and McDonald's french fries, then they don't know about they don't even know about fresh. They don't care about fresh. So you need to lay it out. Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to point that out, why it was important.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. And then, you know, olive oil is a food. It degrades over time. It's not always fresh. Therefore, right, fresh pressed olive oil is better than not fresh olive oil. And you're right. And so we find that when you say those things like, oh, yeah, duh, everyone gets it. I found in doing a lot of this work that even if they know that, we found, even if they know that fresh is better, it does not hurt to hit on that in your sales copy. Even if briefly, you don't need to go into maybe a ton of proof to prove it, but just so that you're on, so you have that those chain of yeses, so that you're on the same page, right? Hey, we agree that fresh is better, right? Okay, and olive oil is a food, right? And it doesn't last forever, it degrades, right? We found that you get higher conversions if you start with those very basic assumptions.
Well, this is so interesting. I'm totally on board with you, 100%. I've never heard it laid out so succinctly and so clearly until now. I really haven't. I also want to say that there's probably a tremendous resistance to doing this among a lot of people, maybe not trained direct response people, direct response copywriters, but certainly in the ad agency world to, you know, if you look on a TV commercial and they're going to talk about something, it's going to be self-conscious or snarky or sarcastic. It's just to lay out simple facts in order to make an argument. They can't do it with a straight face and with a clear head. So there are a lot of counterexamples that you have to be aware of. And yet, if you want higher conversions, you should listen to what Billy's saying, not what TV commercials are doing. Okay, so let's get to this question, and maybe you already answered it, but if there's anything else you want to say, what is a valid and sound argument, and why should copywriters care? I think we've basically covered that, but is there anything else you want to add to that?
No, it's those two tests. So does the logic add up? Does it make sense? Are there any fallacies in it? Is there a disconnect? And then two, the soundness. Have you proven it? And the soundness is really what eats up the space on your sales page or your webinar. So there's an expand and contract dynamic going on here. You can contract a sales page into a syllogism, and then you can expand it into a sales page.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, I know you have a lot of experience and success in the content creation online course space. What would you say is the biggest mistake content creators make when they're producing free content?
It's not taking this argumentation-based approach. And there's just a lot of bad advice out there about free content. You know, there's this idea of reciprocity. If you just produce enough content, then it'll come back to you with dollars attached to it. And so, we found that now that we're teaching businesses this and saying, no, actually, what you have to know what you're doing. When you're doing marketing, if you think marketing is just hype, then that's what you're going to do, and you're going to get the results associated with that. If you think marketing is what a lot of people advise, which is just talking about your topic and just teaching your topic, but not taking a stand on it, not putting a thesis forward, then you're going to get the results associated with that, which are typically, yeah, you might get a ton of followers, and that might be good. We don't want to go on a tangent here. That might be good if you want to grow an influencer business, but I'm not talking to influencers. I'm talking to business owners who are selling products and services, not advertising. Okay. So you might get a bunch of followers, but that doesn't mean that you're going to get sales, because it's only when you take this argumentation-based approach that you build the beliefs that customers need in order to buy.
Okay.
I just want to jump in and point out the difference of your approach, which is it feels like this is pre-framing. This is setting the frames that your people see the problem, the solution through. And I think that I totally agree. That's something that people miss in their marketing and their content is that. And when you take this approach, when people finally do get to your sales page, they're already ready to buy.
Yeah, absolutely, Nathan. Yeah, you have a position. You're taking a position is a good way to say it. And that involves acknowledging the person's pain points and then leading them to your solution, but always with that position. Always from the position of your argument.
Can you give me an example, even for a course creator, if you can think of one of what a position actually looks like?
Yeah, so the co-author on the book, Tiago Forte, is the founder of Building a Second Brain. He's a great example. So he teaches this productivity system, which has to do with taking notes, digital note-taking, and using that to enhance your creative output. And so he would talk about productivity before, but it wasn't until he started doing this belief building method and taking a position and just saying outright, hey, notes are important. Cause he just like the freshness example, he just took that for granted, right? Cause he's a productivity nerd like I am. And so he just assumed that people knew that note taking was important and they had all these false beliefs. It's going to take a lot of time. I'm not going to use it. So once he started creating a list of claims to combat those false beliefs, he took that position and built the beliefs that his customers needed in order to buy. And now he has a very successful 7-figure business.
Excellent. Yeah. So much of this ties into the curse of knowledge. But once you realize what your curse of knowledge is, then what do you do about it? And that's what you're talking about. Now, we talked about the five light bulbs, your great five light bulbs model a couple of years ago, and I'm actually going to put the link in the show notes to both the audio and the video version, the YouTube version of that. But could you talk about how belief building approach, how the approach ties into the five light bulbs?
Yes, yes, that was fun talking about that last time on here. And my thinking has evolved on it, and we've added more nuance to it. So quickly, the five light bulbs, they're categories of messaging, things that you want to say in your copywriting. So light bulb one represents your customer's status quo. This is where they have a problem. So you're speaking to the problem. Light bulb two represents the other options they've tried before. You want to speak to those. Light bulb three represents your approach or your unique approach. You have a lot of copywriter listeners, so this is the unique mechanism, to use Eugene Schwartz's term. Light bulb four represents your offer, which includes your product and the bonuses, guarantees, pricing, etc. And light bulb five represents the customer's new life. So this is the imagine kind of copy, right? Imagine what life is like on the other side of that bridge there. So that's the five light bulbs, and so it's great because it's simple. You know, your listener now can hear that and run their own offer through the five light bulbs and kind of do a mental audit. Am I hitting on them? But where my thinking on it got more sophisticated was when I studied argumentation and these tools of philosophy. And this is why I wrote the book, because I was trying to figure out why does the five light bulbs work? What's the philosophy behind it? And what I realized is that each light bulb is a high level claim that you're making. So for example, the claim associated with light bulb one is the claim that I understand you. So I, business owner, understand you, customer. That is a claim. And so once you know that it's a claim and you know about this claim proof model, this formula, then you can see that whole thing expand, those five light bulbs, those five circles, it suddenly becomes more like a hub and spoke model. You know, these emergent properties appear. And so now we can use all, like for example, the ethos, pathos, logos, those three forms of proof to prove that claim that I understand you. And when you realize that you can then apply, you can run that same play with all five light bulbs, suddenly you have endless content options and you have a really powerful persuasion model.
That's really good. Anytime you can build belief and it seems to multiply the opportunities to do that, that's terrific. Real quickly before, because I want to get to your book, but we were talking about this before, the misconception that copywriters have when it comes to using emotion versus logic. Could you talk about that briefly?
So you hear this a lot in sales and marketing discussions, and there's this phrase, it's almost a cliche, that customers buy on emotion and justify with logic. The issue I see there is that there's two different types of logic, and you got to know which one you're talking about. In that context, logic is usually some kind of post-purchase rationalization, right? It's like me, Billy, I bought this big truck and I tell my wife, Laura, it's because we're hauling stuff around to the other house, but really it's because I want to feel like a man, right? That's like the emotional reason. That's usually how people talk about it. That's fine. That's not the logic I'm talking about. The logic I'm talking about is the syllogism, is having this valid argument with the deductive reasoning. And what you'll find is that you need to have that in place, because it doesn't matter how emotional your argument is. If that thing doesn't connect, if it's invalid, you're going to confuse your customer. So that is the foundation. And so they go together. They're not mutually exclusive in my world, logic and emotion. You have that logical foundation, and then you can use emotion to create that sound argument where you really persuade the customer.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that's really good. It's a wonderful distinction between the two types of logic. Let's talk about Simple Marketing for Smart People. This is a great book. I think helps a lot of people who are kind of uncomfortable because they see marketing as sleazy and coercive. And you're showing, no, actually, quite the opposite. This is what I took away, and please correct me if you meant something different, was that you're saying you can sell to a lot more people if you find out what the people actually want and need, and then you can help them build the belief that your product has to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't need to be sleazy or hypey or whatever that is. That's all downstream. That's in the expression of your argument. And you don't need to express your argument that way. You can do it in a mature, sophisticated way that really respects your audience and is more aligned with your tone and style.
What prompted you to write the book?
Well, Tiago, my co-author, and I, we've been speaking about this. You know, he was a great client. He's become a business partner and friend. And we've been talking about this, running programs for a few years. And I said to him, you know, we got a book in us. We got a book here, everything that we've said. So, you know, let's bring this to the masses here. And so you see this dynamic, this bouncing back and forth between me teaching in the book and then him really as a case study and his own testimony really to using these things in his business, which it does not allow for any of that hype or sleaze or anything with his customers. And we've been really thrilled with the feedback. Yeah, you know, people are telling us that this has red-pilled me on marketing. That was my favorite Amazon review.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't understand the structure of marketing, including some marketers, I guess, good marketing. And I think you lay it out very clearly. It's a great book. It's called Simple Marketing for Smart People. We've put the link to the Amazon page in the show notes. Wow.
I want to co-sign. This episode was a perfect dovetail for last week's episode. So go back and listen to them back to back. You'll get a lot out of putting the two episodes together. Also, I just wanted to reemphasize today with the amount of available research at your fingertips and the ability to compare competing products with each other, the ability to go and look up all different types of reviews on all different types of websites. We're dealing with much more sophisticated markets nowadays. And so this kind of stuff, you mentioned the hypey versus the logical. A lot of times people are in a more logical mindset while they're researching, while they're looking for which option is the best option for them, where we didn't really have that 20 years ago. And so these new ideas that you've brought to the table today, I think they might have been poo-pooed in the past, but they're so important nowadays. And it's one of the few things that I've seen change. We always like to talk about the fundamentals never change, humans never change, but the environment that we're in has changed. And so the stuff that you talked about today is important. Whereas in the past, you could get away with ignoring this stuff. You can't really get away with ignoring it anymore.
Yeah. You know, you need to use your logical faculties, your ability to process proof, to compare things objectively a lot more today than you used to, simply because there's a lot more information, a lot more options, and a lot more ways you can be taken advantage of too.
Okay. Billy, appreciate you coming back on, man. We will have links to your previous episode. We'll have links to your book, and we'll have the ability to access last week's episode. Like I said, go back and listen to both of these episodes one after another. You'll get a lot out of it. You can get all of that over at copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later.
Thank you.
Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.